This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
When it's good to be a Bobo. From Marketplace in Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Uhlerin for David Brancaccio. We'll get there in a second, but first, President Joe Biden promised 2 years of tuition-free community college for all Americans when he was on the campaign trail last year. That proposal, however, is one of the things that's been cut from the Build Back Better Act. That's the social spending bill that's being negotiated in Congress. Community colleges have already seen dips in enrollment for 2 years in a row. But as Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports, free tuition might not be the answer.
Brad Tindall has had his eyes on that free tuition proposal for a while.
But I'm not as disappointed as I could be.
Tindall is the president of Central Wyoming College, where students already tend to get a lot of financial aid. He says a bigger barrier for potential students are the bills they have to pay. They can't take time away from their low-paying jobs to work towards better ones.
Especially in Wyoming, the opportunity cost of going back to school is so high that even if it's totally free, that's not free enough, if you will.
That's true across the country, says Martha Parham with the American Association of Community Colleges. The organization supports boosting the federal Pell Grant, still in Biden's plan, which low-income students can use to cover life expenses after their tuition is paid.
Anything we can do to remove those barriers, which the Pell Grants would certainly help with, but also those wraparound support services.
Like expanded access to childcare, which, for now, is still included in the president's framework. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Traders seem mildly encouraged by the meetings happening in Europe. The FTSE in London is up 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up about 0.4%, with the Dow future up 160 points. The 10-year Treasury yield sits at 1.55%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
More than 20 years ago, conservative political commentator David Brooks wrote about America's creative class of politically progressive knowledge workers in a book called Bobos in Paradise. He said this class, which some call the cultural elite, was basically open to whomever wanted to join. 2 decades later, Brooks says that thinking was naive, and he recently revised some of those thoughts for The Atlantic. He joins me now to discuss. David, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
In the article, you re-examine this group of people that you wrote about back in 2000. You call it the creative class. First of all, I need you to sort of give us the idea of what a Bobo is.
A Bobo is a bourgeois bohemian. So those are people with 60s values and 90s money. So there were people like Steve Jobs who wanted to be a big corporate executive but wanted to wear black t-shirts. 20 years on, the people who made money by trading ideas, first of all, we all moved to big cities. Second, we concentrated power and married each other. Third, we invested huge amounts of money in our kids, so they came to dominate the competitive schools that produced us. And so before long, we had formed a sort of an elite Brahmin class that was driving the rest of the country crazy.
So throughout the piece, you talk about the Bobos, but you use the pronoun we. You include yourself in this group, and I'm probably a part of this group too. I'm curious, was there a moment where you understood or decided that, you know what, I'm talking in the we form here?
It's pretty hard to ignore. My parents are college professors. I went to the University of Chicago, grew up in suburban Philadelphia in New York City. I've been working for 20 years at the New York Times. So when you fit a stereotype as well as I do, you got to confess to it.
Now, one of the points you made 20 years ago was that theoretically you could join this creative class if you had the right degree, if you had the right job, things like that. Is this not true anymore?
That's not true. You know, the top 60 schools, some of them have more people from the top 1% of earners than from the bottom 60%. And so we have not made the society more equal. We've made it more unequal. And not only is there a class division around education, there's this income division as we concentrate in the really affluent cities. And then there's sort of a status and social inequality. So people in the media, in the academy, in the big nonprofits, if you're not seen by us, you feel unseen by society. You feel like you're in flyover country, or you feel neglected. And hence we have Trump. And if you tell people they're invisible, they're going to react really badly. And I should say, not just in the U.S., in every Western country, this has happened.
It sounds like what you're telling me is that education plays a big role in perpetuating this sort of class structure that we have today, yeah?
Yeah, basically the SATs came into being in the 1950s, or their importance, because people at Harvard in the 1950s decided we can't just be Ivy League schools for a bunch of blue blood males. And so at first, going to GPAs and SATs, that was an attempt to democratize education. And it worked for a golden generation. And then it stopped working. Then it just became a way to lock in your advantages as affluent families. It's just crazy, frankly, that we divide young people on the basis of how they do in high school tests and SAT scores between the ages of 15 and 25. It's just crazy that the skills that make you good at a McKinsey consultant are more valued than the skills that make you a good home health nurse. And so I would say the criteria of our meritocracy, nobody would devise that criteria now. We hopefully have a much broader view of what constitutes human excellence, but we settled on this narrow criteria, and now we're kind of stuck with it because of the U.S. News and World Report rankings.
David Brooks is a columnist for the New York Times and a contributing writer for The Atlantic. His latest piece for The Atlantic is called How the Bobos Broke America. David, thank you so much.
Oh, great to be with you.
We'll have more on Bobos tomorrow. Mr. Brooks and I will discuss whether he thinks the attitude toward work will ever change here in the United States of America. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.